Some listeners, a few listeners have emailed and asked about the possibility of chipping in to keep the website going. I'm kind of my own worst enemy. Yeah, I'm open to that. And it's... This show keeps me going as much as I know I sound frustrated all. Sometimes I get volatile sometimes. Ask my wife. She knows. She's very patient. And I'm often my own worst enemy. When I say, believe me, when I say that I want to quit, I mean it when I say that. And but what I have done is drawn a line in the sand. My wife and I got to get out of this. And I'm not putting anything else on the credit cards, nothing else. I need $84 by the end of this month. Doesn't sound like a lot, but I drew my line. I'm not, that's it. And if the site goes down, Lord willing, I'll get something going a few months into next year. But if anybody, if listeners want to chip in to keep the site up, I'm open to that. Earlier this week, I don't know if this is spiritual oppression or what, or just the stress I'm under, and my poor wife's under more than me. Boy, she ever, I love her. Earlier this week, my wife and I had been arguing about the bills, really, fretting about them, and not praying enough, not by a long shot. And that's something my wife and I have been rectifying in the last two nights, earnestly seeking the Lord. So it's brought us into something that we should have been doing more of, brought us back. So that's good. That's very, very good. But I didn't sleep very well for a couple of nights there earlier this week, and I was running late to work. My last day of work before the break. Of course, it's got to happen like this. And I'm the world's slowest driver, one of the world's most cautious drivers. Believe me, I really am. I roll along in this little beat-up jalopy that doesn't cost too much in gas, and I don't care what it looks like. My car is not an extension of my manhood or anything like that. No, it's not. It's just a thing to get me to point A, from point A to point B. It's literally been decades since I got any kind of a ticket, and then I got one. This is ridiculous. Literally the one time in about over two decades that I was in a hurry and did something to cut a corner driving. I am so cautious. Well, the one time, and get nailed. And here in California, that's an infraction. A ticket is about $400. So if you're thinking my $84 for the website sounds paltry, I'm also dealing with this $400 thing now I got to worry about. And I also, here's what I'm thinking. Is it demonic oppression or is it just the stress I'm under? I worked a couple hours extra under the table for somebody 3 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago. And the person gave me $50. And I put it in my pocket, and somewhere between me putting it in my pocket and getting home, I lost the $50. And it's been that kind of month. And so if you guys want to chip in to keep the website up, I'm game. I hope you don't think I'm would be fleecing you. I've never asked for any donations. I've never put any kind of PayPal thing up on my site for donations. No credit card symbols to donate. Nothing like that. So I hope you don't think I would be fleecing you. I've never done that. Never done that. But I've been blitzed this month. A lot of it has been accumulating. Of course it's been accumulating. Here, my wonderful wife. I need to support her more. I've been trying. I haven't been trying enough. It's just sometimes you gotta. It's try so hard. It seems like it's excruciating, and I tend to be oblivious and a lot absent-minded. I just have to redouble my efforts to support my wife and get us out of this. And try to treat this show as more of a cathartic thing rather than a thing to... Well, I don't know. Sometimes it is, even if I vent. Anyway, if you guys want to do that, that's great. I'm game. If not, no sweat. The site will go down at the end of the month, and I'll try to get something together maybe 2 or 3 months into the new year after I get my act together here. Another thing that happened this week, earlier this week, is... this is nip. Of course this would happen now. I got invited to be a guest on a talk show, on a real radio, AM radio talk show, I think, as far as I can tell, looks like it is. I don't know. The thing, I don't even know if I will respond because the person didn't really email me. What they did was, the manager of this guy's show posted something on my book review, in response to a book review I wrote, and it didn't look like he really knew much about what I do, or I don't know if it was in response to this particular book review I did. I don't know. It was really a perfunctory invitation, and but it looks like they wanted me to go. I don't know what they wanted really, other than to come on the show. So I'm not going to do it because two reasons, and they're both interlinked. I don't know them. And, of course, there's so few of us who actually get it in the world. Chances are they're not going to understand or want to understand the things that I would tell them. And sure enough, here's the other thing. I went onto this guy's site, and the manager included the talk show host's name. I went onto their site, and sure enough, the guy's a constitutionalist. He thinks the Constitution was legit, and... got to get back to the calling himself a citizen of the United States and how we got to rally the citizens to petition this. He's not going to understand any darn thing I would throw his way. He's not going to want to understand it. And I know where he's coming from because my initial reaction to the fact that the Constitution was a fraud, I had this initial gut reaction, purely emotional, that said, no, I'm not going to accept this. I want to remain a constitutionalist. I want to stick with revering the Founding Fathers. And that was at least the second time I had that same reaction about the Vatican stuff. And Viz helped me through that. And actually, Viz helped me through the other one, too. I owe a lot to that guy. I actually did my homework and went and actually read what the Informer and James Montgomery... knowledge is freedom, what they've, many, many, many years of assiduous research, what they proved. Assiduous research in law libraries. They did the wet work. They proved it. It was all a fraud, the Constitution and the Founding Fathers. So that made me want to, you know what, whether the site goes down or not, I'm going to get in some more of this James Montgomery piece. And if the site goes down, distribute this stuff. Tell everybody you know. The Constitution was a damn lie. It was a fraud. It only got worse after that. It gave us a few privileges, sure. But the freedoms it gave us had more to do with us being so geographically distant from the old world. That was the main reason. Come on. It wasn't anything. The founding fathers sold us out. And they're not founding fathers. We're not supposed to call any man father. And here's a reminder. When the papists throw it back in our face and say, yeah, because I just heard this the other day on a brief interview, never mind where, but this papist was claiming quite rightly that the so-called Protestants or evangelicals, where do they get off saying that we shouldn't call any man father in the Bible when we call people pastors, and the Bible also says don't call people pastors. And well, at least in my NASB, I don't know what that would be in the KJV. I haven't looked it up. But anyway, he's right. I think he's right. We're not supposed to call any man teacher, pastor, or father. None of that. You know what? He's right. And that reminded me why the Puritans and others, certain Christian, maybe remnant Christian sects, they call themselves brother and sister. And that's what we ought to call. That's we're all equal in Christ. So that papist is right. So how did I get off on that tangent? I don't know. But anyway, without further ado, here is part 6. This is chapter 6 of James Montgomery's work, which, okay, this is available at atgpress.com, againstthegrainpress.com, atgpress. And then you click on Knowledge is Freedom on the left-hand side, and it'll take you right to James Montgomery's work. This is part 6 of his work. The work in total, the online book, is called The United States is Still a British Colony. This is part 6. It's entitled, How Long Can a Corporation Live? Here goes. In order to keep this short, I'll get right to the point, says James Montgomery. I have been saying for over 2 years that Americans are still subject to the King and Queen or Crown of England. Well, the crown is something different. I think he means that. He knows that. Why? You are subject to whom you pay a tribute or tax. I have shown how the crown is still receiving a tax to compensate the king for his corporate charter in America. I have shown many documents where the king, by charter, created several corporations in America. These corporations were consolidated into America Incorporated in 1783. I have said and shown in these documents that not only did the king intend for his corporations to last forever, but also his tax to benefit his heirs and successors forever. I am going to show you by a recently obtained newspaper article provided by The Informer that brings the historical facts I have presented crashing into the present in a very sobering way. A couple of weeks ago, I put out via email historical documents concerning the creation of New Jersey. I am not going to again attach them to this email. Well, it's no longer an email. This is an essay now. Because it would make it unnecessarily long, which may cause some people to skim the information rather than read it. Anyone that would like these documents concerning the creation of New Jersey can send me, James Montgomery, an email to that effect, and I will promptly send it to you. I include in total, at the end of this research paper, the news article I will now quote from. Quote, they were 12 men, most of them from London. Most would never set foot in the New World, but they owned half of what would become New Jersey, 1.1 million acres of verdant field and forest and pristine shoreline. All but a smattering of those lands were sold off long ago, but their corporation survived, its shares handed down from generation to generation. unquote. Is that the end of the quote? That's hard to tell here. At any rate, I don't know if he closed that quote or if this is his words. I'll just read it. It is now 314 years old. The oldest continuously operated corporation in the United States. But not for long. A court will soon dissolve the East Jersey Board of Proprietors, and a vestige of colonial America will be gone. Still, the proprietors met every year on the third Tuesday of May to sort through the year's business. Shares were bought and sold, though the proprietors are circumspect when asked about the price. I could never get a straight answer, said Lurie. I think that's the end of the quote right there. Among the shareholders are prominent families like that of Governor Thomas Keene. Fewer than half live in New Jersey, and some live in Europe. What does this mean to dissolve the East New Jersey Corporation? This is just one question I want to address. I question that a civil district court can dissolve a corporation it had nothing to do with in its creation. How can a de facto court dissolve a corporation created under the common law? If the corporation is dissolved, what does this mean? The King of England was grantor of the corporation in America. This cannot be disputed. He is the corporation's soul, the grantor of the early charters. A part of his corporate charters were the creation of civil corporations, the governments, from the largest to the smallest. The king also saw fit to reward those close to him with grants of land, either sole proprietors or as a group of proprietors known as an aggregate corporation. The corporation formed by the king formed a tree with him as the base, the main corporation. His charters are sub-corporations. His sole or aggregate proprietors are sub-sub-corporations further up the tree. These corporations are just as the corporations of today in the way they are set up and managed. The United States was and is a consolidation and restructuring of the sub-corporations, the colonies, i.e. North Carolina, Virginia, etc., extending to all the states in the Union. Upon their admission, they are also recreated district states by the March 4th, 1791 Act by Washington. You want a side note? I think the Informer writes a lot about this. George Washington was a scumbag. He was a deceitful dirtbag, land conniver. Really, honestly, what he did in 1791, he caused all the states to, when he was president, to right away, right after the country started, he brought about district states to overlap and supersede the geographic states. And, boy, I wish I had the works of the Informer. I got him in my other room, but look into what Washington did to create these district states in the 1791 Act. It was really a knife in the back of the country. I hope to get that at some point, too. I'll get into that further later on. Even if it's, Lord willing, even if it's late next year. Who knows? We'll see. Continuing. Corporation soul. A corporation consisting of one person only and his successors. An older concept of the status of a king or a bishop as incorporated. in order to give to them and their successors legal capacities and advantages, particularly that of perpetuity, which they could not have in their natural capacities. That was from Ballantyne's Law Dictionary, 1969, third edition. Also see the following court cases. Asheville Division, number 15, versus Aston, Dougherty versus Sprinkle, Carson versus Commissioners, McDowell versus Hemp Hill, Ferriby versus Sanders. Now, what would be the effect of the East New Jersey Proprietors Corporation being dissolved? The holdings revert back up the line in the corporate tree towards the king. If the U.S. did not exist as the corporation next in line, it would go back to the king's heirs and successors. This is called reversion. This is from Bouvier's Law Dictionary, Volume 3, 1914. Reversion, the residue of an estate and left in the grantor to commence in possession after the determination of some particular estate granted out by him. The return of land to the grantor and his heirs after the grant is over. The following is from the court case Marshall versus Lovelace, quote, "But this state had no title to the territory prior to the title of the King of Great Britain and his subjects, nor did it ever claim as Lord Paramount to them. This state," these are capital S states here, "this state was not the original grantor to them, nor did they ever hold by any kind of tenure under the state, or owe it any allegiance or other duties to which an escheat is annexed. How then can it be said that the lands in this case naturally result back by a kind of reversion to this state, to a source from whence it never issued, and from tenants who never held under it? As the original grantor and corporation, the king, exist, the corporation is forever as written. As I have said before, the charters of the king were also written to be trusts. To further understand this, read the following quotes from Blackstone's commentaries. Quote, 637D, lay corporations, 1, civil corporations, 2, eleemosynary corporations. Lay corporations are of two sorts, civil and eleemosynary. I know I'm pronouncing that wrong. The civil are such as are erected for a variety of temporal purposes. The king, for instance, is made a corporation to prevent in general the possibility of an interregnum or vacancy of the throne and to preserve the possessions of the crown entire. For, immediately upon the demise of one king, his successor and dignity, other lay corporations are erected for the good government of a town or particular district, as a mayor and commonalty, bailiff or burgesses, or the like. Some for the advancement and regulation of manufactures and commerce, as the trading companies of London and other towns." Unquote. That from Blackstone's Commentaries, Volume 1. Quote, 639B, English law. 1. Corporations by common law. 2. Corporations by prescription. But with us in England, the king's consent is absolutely necessary to the erection of any corporation, either impliedly or expressly given. Another method of implication, whereby the king's consent is presumed, is as to all corporations by prescription, such as the City of London and many others, which have existed as corporations, time whereof the memory of man runneth not to the contrary, and therefore are looked upon in law to be well created. For though the member thereof can show no legal charter of incorporation, yet in cases of such high antiquity the law presumes there once was one, and that by the variety of accidents which a length of time may produce, the charter is lost or destroyed. Unquote. That's from Blackstone's Commentaries, Volume 1, page 680. Quote, 640. 3. Consent of King, how given? A. By Parliament. The methods by which the King's consent is expressly given are either by Act of Parliament or Charter. Unquote. That again from Blackstone's Commentaries, Volume 1. These following two quotes will also be from Blackstone's Commentaries, Volume 1. Quote, 641, B, by charter, all the other methods, therefore, whereby corporations exist, by common law, by prescription, and by Act of Parliament, are for the most part reducible to this of the King's Letters Patent, or Charter of Incorporation. The King's creation may be performed by the words Cremus Erigimus Fundimus Incorporamus, meaning we create, we erect, we found, we incorporate, or the like. Nay, it is held that if the King grants to a set of men to have guildem mercatorium, a mercantile meeting or assembly, this is alone sufficient to incorporate and establish them forever. Unquote. Quote, 643. 5. Creation of corporations by patent. The King, it is said, may grant to a subject the power of erecting corporations, though the contrary was formerly held. That is, may permit the subject to name the persons and powers of the corporation at his pleasure. But it is really the King that erects, and the subject is but the instrument. For though none but the King can make a corporation, yea, qui facit per alium, facit per se, i.e., he who does a thing by the agency of another does it himself. Unquote. This again from Blackstone's Commentaries, Volume 1. Quote, 651, B, civil corporations. 1, lay corporations. But first, as I have laid it down as a rule, that the founder, his heirs, or assigns, are the visitors of all lay corporations, let us inquire what is meant by the founder. The founder of all corporations, in the strictest and original sense, is the King alone, for he only can incorporate a society. And in civil incorporations, such as mayor and commonalty, etc., where there are no possessions or endowments given to the body, there is no other founder but the King. Unquote. And again, the following is from Blackstone's Commentaries, Volume 1, quote, 654, 10, dissolution of corporations. But the body politic may also itself be dissolved in several ways, which dissolution is the civil death of the corporation. And in this case, their lands and tenements shall revert to the person or his heirs who granted them to the corporation. For the law doth annex a condition to every such grant, that if the corporation be dissolved, the grantor shall have the lands again, only during the life of the corporation, which may endure forever, but when that life is determined by the dissolution of the body politic, the grantor takes it back by reversion, as in the case of every other grant for life. Unquote. Now back to the words of James Montgomery. Keep in mind, the East New Jersey Corporation is a sub-sub-corporation granted and created by the King of England as grantor, his heirs and successors obviously still exist. Since a sub-sub-corporation is proven to exist, the parent corporation has to exist. A sub-corporation could not exist without the parent corporation's existence. Obviously, the parent, the grantor, i.e., the king, did not cease to exist at the end of the Revolutionary War, or by the signing of the 1783 peace treaty. Quite to the contrary. Just as the informer and I have been saying, oh, the king's corporations are alive and well. Doing what, you say? Doing what they were created for, collecting taxes for the heirs and successors, making a profit for the king's investment. Now, side note, you guys see why I can't go on this constitutionalist's show on the radio? He's not... This is so far above his head where he's at. His emotions are not ready for this. It's like I'm going to be talking Chinese to the guy. So, no, I can't go to that. He needs to educate himself and read. Which, of course, he probably won't. Continuing. That's why the collection process of the IRS or a bank are what they are. If you owe the king money, he will foreclose on his property, but not to the exclusion of the rights of another corporation, i.e. creditor. For example, if you owned, that's a joke by the way, your house and had a car financed, they would sell the house to satisfy the king's debt. They would not sell the car unless there was sufficient equity in the car to not only pay the creditor, but also enough equity left over to pay the king, over and above his collection costs. You could turn that example any way you wanted, but now you know what established the rules for foreclosure. And there's a lot of that going around these days, huh? Read the following court case I just found in North Carolina. It should complete the reality of what, in fact, is taking place. Quote, since the right, if existent, is derived by the state, capital S, from the common law, we may first inquire into its origin and into the theory upon which it is founded. In reference to the royal prerogative, Coke says, as to the third protection, cum clausula volumnus. The king, by his prerogative, regularly is to be preferred in payment of his duty or debt by his debtor before any subject, although the king's debt or duty be the latter. And the reason hereof is, for that thesaurus regis est fundamentum belli et firmamentum passis, and thereupon the law gave the king remedy by writ of protection to protect his debtor, that he should not be sued or attached until he paid the king's debt. But hereof grew some inconvenience, for to delay other men of their suits, the king's debts were the more slowly paid. And for remedy thereof, it is enacted by the statute of 25E3, that the other creditors may have their actions against the king's debtor and proceed to judgment, but not to execution, unless he will take upon him to pay the king's debt, and then he shall have execution against the king's debtor for both the two debts, unquote. That from Giles versus Grover. Doesn't say the year. Whether the doctrine of the king's right to be preferred in the payment of debts due him was abrogated when the common law was adopted as the basis of American jurisprudence, or whether the functions and powers exercised by him in this respect devolve upon the several states, lowercase s, is a question concerning which there is divergence of opinion. The existence of the right has been maintained by the courts of New York, Montana, Minnesota, Georgia, West Virginia, Maryland, and others, and with equal emphasis it has been denied in New Jersey, Michigan, South Carolina, Mississippi, and others. And James Montgomery lists a long list of court trials to look up here. I'll skip those. The theory on which the prerogative is upheld is thus stated in the case of Carnegie Trust Corporation, Supra. Quote, "The king, therefore, and the prerogatives that were personal to him, being repugnant to our Constitution, are abrogated. But his sovereignty, powers, functions, and duties, insofar as they pertain to civil government, now devolve upon the people of the state," capital S, "and consequently are not in conflict with any of the provisions of our Constitution. Inasmuch, therefore, as the claims or monies due the king for the support and maintenance of the government, whether derived from taxes or other sources of income, were preferred over the claims of others, it follows that, under the first subdivision of the provision of the Constitution of 1777, quoted, such preference became a part of the common law of our state," capital S, "and is so continued under our present Constitution," unquote. On the other hand, in Central Trust Corporation versus Third Avenue Railroad Corporation, the Circuit Court of Appeals of the Second Circuit, affirming an order of the Circuit Court of the United States for the Southern District of New York, said, quote, "We regard it as settled law in this state," capital S, "that the state," capital S, "does not succeed as sovereign to all the prerogatives of the British Crown, among others, the right to a preference for debts due it over all other creditors," unquote. This conclusion was approved by the Circuit Court of Appeals, Ninth Circuit, in Brown versus American Bonding Company, and Corporation Commission versus Trust Corporation, 1927, unquote. Notice, in the above court case, the judge says this part of the common law continues under our quote-unquote present Constitution. This speaks to the fact of the change that took place in 1870 to our Constitution through the criminal 14th Amendment, and suggests further changes could take place. Just another observation. The Queen's acceptance of the surrender of the New Jersey government, which took place at the Court of St. James the 17th day of April, 1709, is an important word that needs to be defined. This from Bouvier's Law Dictionary, 1914. Surrender, quote, "a yielding up of an estate for life or years to him who has an immediate estate in reversion or remainder, by which the lesser estate is merged in the greater by mutual agreement." Unquote. This further proves what was shown earlier. No matter how it happens, the only way to change the corporate grantor, the corporation's soul, is for the king to be conquered or die. It would also be necessary for him not to have any heirs or successors. Because no matter whether the sub-corporation is still alive, or if it is dissolved and the holdings revert back to the crown, either way a tax is due through the sub-sub-corporation, the proprietors, or it is paid to the sub-corporation, the United States. The king's charters and grants are forever, unless the king and his heirs and successors come to an end one way or another. The crown, the heirs and successors are today alive and well. Therefore, their charters and grants that were not affected by the 1783 peace treaty are still in full force and effect. The only thing to determine is which of the sub-corporations exist yet today. Now we know of two. This is conclusive proof that at least the New Jersey charters are in existence. And as I stated before, the parent corporation would also have to exist. If the New Jersey charters are still in existence, then how about some of the others? In my state of North Carolina, there is also conclusive proof that the North Carolina Charter still exists. As I have raised this issue before, it bears repeating. In the North Carolina Declaration of Rights of 1776, wherein you and I have always been taught that we were made to be free men under our natural rights and common law rights were reserved for us. However, we find that someone else's rights were reserved, the king's, and those he had made grants of land to in North Carolina. Again, the king's interest concerning his debt is put before those in America that thought they were now free men. America has never been free of the king's debt or his tax collectors. The following quote is from Section 25 of the 1776 North Carolina Constitution, or Declaration of Rights. Quote, "And provided further that nothing herein contained shall affect the titles or possessions of individuals holding or claiming under the laws heretofore in force, or grants heretofore made by the late King George II, or his predecessors, or the late Lord's proprietors, or any of them." Unquote. And that was Part 6 of James Montgomery's online book, "The United States is Still a British Colony." This chapter 6 was called "How Long Can a Corporation Live?" I'm Gordon Comstock. This has been the Ministry of Truth.